So some of you know I teach a couple of small high school classes, and I like the end of the year. I teach usually juniors and seniors. That's about the age I can handle. I was just talking to Lindsay out there about it. About juniors and seniors is where I can handle kind of day-to-day talking to kids. As it gets down to junior high, I'm not sure what to do there, even with my own junior hires. But this is the end of the year where the kids start coming up and doing this stuff, and you can see it. Maybe not quite as overt as that, but there was a point that somewhere around the last 2 weeks of the year, I get a couple of kids here and there that I've taken special interest in who want to come up and let you know, you really have affected my life in some major ways. And it's a very emotional time for me, at least. Like, I'm like, oh, geez, thank you. You know, and they don't say it like that because they don't know how to. They're a little awkward. But you know that it was meaningful. And there was this time in my life somewhere, oh boy, probably 15 years ago, where a shift happened, where I used to identify with the kid in this movie. And I used to kind of see myself and remind myself of all of these people who were older than me that had kind of empathized with me and realized that I was going through some things. And that to me, they were a really big deal. And I needed some help getting through those. But then a shift happened, and I started to identify with the teacher and see these kids that maybe I have helped or people that I have helped in some ways that have come back and said thank you and things like that. So what I'd like to do today is most of us identify to some degree with one of those two. My guess is, though, most of us can identify with the teacher. We can get an idea of that, you know, idea of wanting to invest in someone, care for someone, whether it's our own children or if you have children or maybe a friend, even if you are not a parent and you're, you know, pretty young, maybe it's just someone that you've helped out. You've been there for them. But here's what I'd like to do. I'd like us to identify fully with Charlie, this kid who's going through some huge struggles. If you haven't seen this movie, I'd recommend it. I think it's a really great movie, but he's just dealing, it's more than a coming-of-age story. It's really about the human condition and trying to deal with our pain and loneliness and what we do with our past and needing someone to come into our life and change it. So I want to throw it to you. I just want to ask you, you can raise your hands or something like that. Was there somebody when you were in maybe junior high or high school, maybe even college, maybe it was a different time, maybe you were even a little older, and someone that came along and maybe you'd call them a mentor, or they just kind of came into your life for a brief moment, maybe even just a week or two. Maybe they were there for years, and they kind of empathized. They understood what was going on in your life. And last week we talked about acceptance. This is another level. They didn't just accept you, they kind of got you, and they cared for you in a way that you really needed at that time. I'm just curious, does anybody have anybody that you remember doing that for you? That you'd be willing to just share their name and maybe just say, yeah, this happened to me. Is there anybody? I know it's kind of a, you know, I get it. It's kind of an emotional thing, but I'm just curious. Would anybody say, yeah, I identify with Charlie, and here's the name of this person that did that? Anybody at all? Yeah.
A professor in college named
Richard. What was the last name?
Richard Simon Hansen.
Oh, Richard Simon Hansen.
Okay,
gotcha. Cool. Nice. That's awesome. He was a professor of yours in college. Oh, nice.
Talked about God and the universe, and I was not in a very good place, like, for the beginning of that.
And then he helped you through
like
that.
Years, and, yeah, I really attribute his influence to where I am today.
That's awesome. That's a great story. I don't know if you all heard that, but she's just talking about a professor who really cared for her basically on a weekly basis and kind of brought her in and helped her go from a difficult place to a good place. Anybody else willing to, yeah, Holly?
There's a professor in college. I don't even remember his name, but I tried dropping his class and he wouldn't let me.
Okay. That's good.
It was a business management class. We had to do a financial analysis. So
okay.
I didn't get balance, so I was going to drop the class.
Gotcha. Nice, gotcha.
And he just tried to tell me, I don't have to know everything.
Nice, nice.
And to the point, he just said, you know, do you really think I know what I'm doing when I'm up there?
Right.
I'm making it up half the time.
I like the idea that nobody balances, and he wasn't just talking about numbers.
Yeah. And, you know, he just said, I remember the last day of class, and I kind of walked out of the exam with my head down, and he's like, what? Mm. He says, C is a great grade in my class. You can't always get A's.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah,
right. But you got it later.
Later.
Yeah.
And it made more sense.
Yeah. Anybody else? Yeah, Lauren.
In high school, Jack Cummings, he was my history teacher.
It's a great name, Jack Cummings. Yeah. Cool. That's cool. I always feel like my life could have been so much more impressive if my name was like Jack Cummings. Like I do. Like I could have done such great things. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, so, you know, you probably all have somebody at least at some level that you can identify something with that. What I want to talk about today now is shifting. If we've had somebody do that for us, what would it look like to shift and become Mr. Anderson? And that shift would be that we are the person that looks to empathize with other people. Just to kind of put us all in the same place is empathy, to understand and share in the feelings of another person. I asked my kids this week at the table, I said, what does empathy mean to you? You guys know what empathy means? And they all, like often happens, gave me blank stares. But then my 13-year-old very quickly just said, oh, that's to walk in another person's shoes. And I'm like, yeah, that's a really good definition. I'm going to put that up. So that's the definition. The idea of being not just accepting someone, like last week, but being there not just for someone, but with someone. Like understanding what they're going through and caring about what they're going through. I tend to be okay with empathy. It's not like my greatest trait or anything like that. But there's one place I have a really hard time showing empathy, more than anywhere else. I'm pretty good here and I'm pretty good at school and places like that. I'm not good on the road at showing empathy. I'm really bad. Is there anybody else who's difficult showing empathy on the road? Okay, we have some others. I don't feel alone. I'm really bad. When I'm driving, I am usually not trying to understand what other drivers are going through. I don't care. In fact, I'm upset at whatever they're going through because it's affecting my day. I get extremely self-focused and selfish, and it's about me and where I need to go. And when I get that focused on where I want to be, there's some things that kind of level the playing field. And one of those things that levels the playing field is I am trying to get around all of these people and whatever they're going through, I don't care. And then there's these road signs that come up. And whenever there's like this road sign or something happening on the road, everything kind of stops. I live right by Highway 36. That has just been life on Highway 36 for like the last like 3 or 4 years. Everything just stops when everybody sees a road sign. And so there's certain things that come up that kind of levels everything. No longer am I able to just be in my own little world. I got to figure out everybody else and what they're going through. So let me give you some examples of some of the road signs that come up. Whenever I see cones with lights on them like this, I know, and maybe you do as well, it's going to be a while. It's not going to be an easy thing to get through. And the other thing that's going to be annoying is we've all got to merge. And I've got to figure out, is somebody going to let me merge? Everybody's just doing the same thing, buddy. Just let us all in. I'm not being overly empathetic, but let's just all follow the rules. And then there's the guy that comes around really fast, and that's usually Rob. And he's coming around really fast in his truck, and it's like, all right, whatever. Cones. The other one that bothers me, though, is this. And it's not so much the slow stop turny thing, you know, the slow stop turny. It's that this person has that much power over what I'm doing. And like, I'm like, oh, we're all going. And then he's like, boink. And I'm like, oh, erd. And you got to stop. And I wait, and I look at him. And he's not happy. He's not enjoying what he's doing. And that's part of the reason that he's hurting me, I'm sure. It's his way of getting his anger out on me by making me stop. But that makes me know, as soon as I see that, you know, a little too much power, but it's going to be a little while, but I'm going to eventually get there. You know, it's just that one simple one. Then there's the electronic signs. We get a lot of these on highways. You know, when you go on highways, you get these. I always think through the ones that are going up I-70. Whenever I see those, I get a little like, I better see that. You know, I'm driving to Breckenridge, and it says Breckenridge, 3.5 hours. I'm like, oh, what does that mean? Hey, what's happening? Or when they put it in minutes, it's worse. They're like 180 minutes. I'm like, okay, I need that guy that you, yeah, 3 hours? What are you talking about? So I don't like that one. And then the final one that's bothersome in a couple ways. They don't just put the 20 speed limit, it's the double light, you know, boom, 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 going off. I like this, whoever's doing this is going over. I really like that. But I really don't want to slow down, but then I know it's the law. But I also don't want to hit a child. Like, that's one of my deals. I made the vow in life that I would not hit a child with my car. And I know that it's going to be, all right, I got to watch for little kids, and I got to go really slow. I'm okay. The goal of all of these road signs is that we know exactly what we're supposed to be doing at any given time. That anytime you see a road sign, you go, ah, now I understand. And they're supposed to be helpful, even if they become annoying, that we know how to handle things. One of the problems with empathy is it would be really nice that when you came up on any individual, if they would have a road sign, and you would know what you're in for. Because most of us are just coming across with either expressionless faces or smiles or a little bit of dourness, whatever it might be, but we don't have signs telling each other, here's what you need to be prepared for. I wish some people could just have this right before I would go talk to them. It would be really nice. It would be nice, wouldn't this, if this was around the neck of your boss the morning they had a big fight with their spouse, and you're about to go ask them a question, and if that just came up, you went, oh, proceed with caution, okay. But we don't get that. Or, I like this one, severe tire damage, do not back up. I always think of this one as being like going on a blind date. If you've ever gone on a blind date, I've gone on a blind date before, and if you've ever done that, or if you've had that experience, you know, you get in, and you go, and about 3 minutes in, you go, oh, this is not good. Like, this is not going to happen, and I have no idea how to get out of this. Like, I'm stuck. We're in. Severe tire damage if I back out. Road closed, that would be nice. Some people just aren't willing to relate to you. They just aren't. And you don't know why. Your insecurities might think it's you. It may just be that they've had a bad day. Whatever it means, but the road is closed. And it's uncomfortable. And then sometimes there's just a stop sign, and it'd be nice to have that. That if you confront this person, you're in for a nasty situation, because some people just don't do confrontation well. They can't handle it. And you don't know that, because you're like, oh, well, let's just discuss this conflict, and let's work it out, and everything will be okay. And they can't deal with it. It would be nice if you just had a stop sign right before you get to them. But we don't have this. We don't get this. Instead, we got to fly blind into every single relationship we have. And we don't know what people are going through. We don't have any nice blinking lights telling us what's going on. So to do this, empathy, to understand and share in the feelings of another person, you know, to walk in another person's shoes, it's just hard to know what they are going through to even be able to try to understand and empathize and care for them. And it's so hard because none of these signs are there. It is really interesting to think about God in this light. That God somehow knows what all of us are going through. Like, God cares so much about you and what you're going through that he understands it, he knows it, and he knows you day to day. He knows the warning signs without having to have them there. He knows when he comes close, proceed with caution, stop, don't come, severe tire damage. He sees all of that. There's a cool psalm where David talks about this. He's kind of talking to God, and sometimes people take the psalms and try to make them very literal things. There's actually more about a poetic beauty in the psalms, and that's what David does. He's just trying to kind of use this figurative language just to talk about the poetic beauty of God knowing us. I told you a couple weeks ago that in the Hebrew, the word know, to know, means to experience. God does, when it says God knows you, God experiences you. He wants to be with you. So I want to turn to that psalm, and I just want to read that. So why don't you turn there with me. It's Psalm 139. It's page 433 in the Bibles right around you. Psalm 139, page 433, and it's on the right side. Page 433. So we'll be on the top right there. And this is David, and we're going to read verses 1 through 8. And as I read these, you just follow along and hear the poetic beauty, like I said, of what David's saying, but try to put yourself in this place as well to understand what God knows about you. So just listen to these words. Verse 1. You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. I'm going to use that definition we just used. You have searched me, Lord, and you experience me. You're with me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. Where can I go from your spirit? Where could I flee from your presence? If I go to the heavens, you're there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you are there. Let that kind of sit with you for a moment. The beauty of a God who experiences you to that level. Think through what David is saying in Psalm 139, which is that God gets you. God gets why you do what you do. God understands your personality. God needs no warning signs to understand the times when you're hurt or you're insecure or you're afraid or you've failed and you're not sure how to get out of it. God knows the times when you've hurt others and you've caused damage in relationships. He gets all of this and he has empathy for you. He cares for you. He experiences you. Now, I don't want us to pretend that we can fully get and grasp that kind of empathy for one another. But when I think of God in that way, I am Charlie, and he's Mr. Anderson, and I just want to hug and go, thank you for knowing me and loving me in spite of all these things. You just love me. To me, that is the idea of grace. But then I am called to be Mr. Anderson to others. Like, I need to give empathy to other people. Those few stories we just heard about people who've done that for us, we now get the opportunity to do that for them. And this isn't just younger people, this is just people we come into contact with. How do we do that? What does it look like to have more empathy? Well, I want to give you a key word, a word that gets lost a lot because people are pretty non-self-aware these days in our culture. They're pretty aware of self, but not of how they are coming across. And the word I want to give you is the word attuned. And I put this little old antenna up. I actually went and purposely found an image of an RCA antenna because I remember having one of these. To be aware and receptive. To basically get reception of where other people are at. To have my antennas fully up, the signals up. Those of you who are like under 30, you may have no idea what this is, but this was the most important thing. This is why I like watching period pieces like Mad Men, which ends tonight if anybody cares, but is because they have things like antennas, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. When I have my antennas up, this is what it looks like. This is my picture of me with an antenna. I'm going about my life, and this is me, but I've got my signals up. And when I come into contact with people, I'm just kind of watching. I'm looking for their nonverbals. I'm trying to see what's really happening with them. When they say they're okay, but I hear that little ending where they're like, oh, I'm okay. Oh, no, you're not. Or, just a tough day this week. Oh, okay. If I have my antennas up, oh, it was tough. What's going on? My issue, and it might be some of yours too, I don't know. My antenna sometimes does not stay on top of my head. Here's where my antenna goes. It goes right into the core of me. And when my antenna is with me, it is not out there catching signals on how people are doing. When my antenna is on me, I'm asking questions like, am I okay? Oh, I'm having an interaction with someone. Am I doing okay? Am I sounding okay? Am I hiding enough? Am I wearing the masks enough so they don't totally see? And I got my antennas fully on me to make sure I'm doing all right. How do I feel? Am I offended by that? No, I'm not offended by that, but I am a little by that. And it's this being attuned to me only. Finding positive relationships, which is what this series has been about, is having my antenna up there and looking out for where other people are at and being open and not judging. We talked about that last week, but open to what they're going through and what it's doing to them. If you'll notice, this whole series, we put this series up that we've been doing, Finding Positive Relationships, you'll notice a shift has happened from self-focus to other-focus. At the beginning, we talked about everybody's defective. We said we all need an as-is sign, if you remember that, a tag that just says as-is. Nobody's normal. We all got issues. We're just going to start from that place. We all got, you know, abnormalities. Fine. That's cool. We're good with that. So then what we'd said in week two is we're going to have positive friendships in spite of that. We're going to learn to be positive with each other. And that took us to the last 3 weeks, including today, which has all been about other people. I'm going to be authentic so other people can know me. I'm going to accept other people just as they are, and I'm not going to make them be something so that they, you know, can be okay with me. And then today, I'm going to walk in their shoes, and I'm going to be that close to them that I understand what they're going through. Our next series, I'm just going to put a little plug in, our next series is Relationships That Last. We built these two right next to each other on purpose. So now we've talked about finding positive relationships, how we do that. How do we keep positive relationships? We're going to keep going with these antennas up. It's a lot about looking out for how we're interacting with others, that we can make them meaningful long term, keeping them solid and healthy. Here's the big problem that I found, at least in my circles I run in. People who do not read others well tend to not know that they don't read others well. And that really is hard. So I'm going to ask you to join with me and become as self-aware as you possibly can. That like me, there's a lot of times our antennas are right in here on us. And that you just open yourself to the idea that it'd be a little bit better for you and for your positive relationships to take that antenna and stick it up on your head. And that you get a little more open to what other people are going through and where they're at. I'm not saying this because I always do this, but I want us to be this kind of church. So, let's look at some road rules to close. We've been talking about this theme of road rules. I'm going to give you some road rules that help you with empathy. That when you have your antennas up, you're ready to kind of see what's going on. And the word I want to use is relational intelligence. It kind of comes out of the idea of emotional intelligence that Daniel Goleman put together in the 90s, if you know anything about that. But it's that way more than, you know, being intelligent, it's really important that we're emotionally intelligent. And that's what kind of gets us, you know, around in life. And the next level of that we're going to talk about today is relational intelligence. I take my emotional intelligence and I relate to people well. I have my antennas up at all times. So I'm going to give you some road rules for relational intelligence. And the first one I'm going to give you is stop. And you're going to be going, okay, stop. What does that mean? Well, for some of us, this is a really important relationally intelligent rule. It means stop talking. Stop rambling. You want to be self-aware? Stop criticizing. Stop gossiping. Stop hogging the spotlight. Stop advising. Just stop. For some people, and I see myself in many of these, for some people, it's really hard to be relationally intelligent because we're doing all of these things. And it's all about how we feel and where we're at. That stop advising one is one that my kids get on me for. I was actually just talking to Lindsay about that. Dad, I don't need advice. In fact, we have a rule in my house with my three children. This is the rule. You can tell me anything, you can have any conversation with me, but I am going to go into advice mode sometimes, and I don't even mean to, and I don't want to. And I tell my kids, you tell me, Dad, I want to tell you what's going on, but I want no advice. And they do. They will come up to me, and they're like, Dad, I need to talk to you. No advice. And I'm like, okay, all right. They're in the driver's seat. They're in power. And so they start talking to me. And the whole time, I swear, I'm like, okay, shut up. Shut up. Don't ruin this. It's a beautiful moment. They're going to remember this when they're 30. They're talking to their therapist. You really, really, really need to keep this going. Be good. My antennas are up. I like the way Proverbs 10:19 says this. I'm just going to throw this verse in here because it's always been a good one for me. The more talk, the less truth. The wise measure their words. Just stop. To do this, I said earlier, we need to look for nonverbal stop signs in conversations. Have your antennas up. See how people are responding to you. This takes a lot of relational intelligence. Let me give you another one. Pass with care. My dad made a joke when I was a kid that I continue with my kids. And I don't know why, but even thinking about it makes me giggle. Every time we see, or used to see, a pass with care sign, you know, as you'd be coming around like rocks or in the mountains or anywhere, you know, you see pass with care. My dad would, every time, he'd go, oh, pass with care. And as we'd pass, he'd go, oh. I don't know why, he just cracked me up. I just laugh and laugh. So I do it with my kids. I'm always like, oh, pass with care, oh. And they don't laugh as much, but that's okay. It's all right. It's all right. The way to pass with care, what it really means is to listen, to open your ears. When we've stopped talking, this is a whole lot easier, by the way. You start to listen to where other people are actually at. Start to ask questions. I want to show you real quick, it's about a minute long. I want to show you my favorite clip. It's like my favorite therapy clip of somebody who absolutely has no clue how to listen. Here, watch this.
Okay, Ted.
Okay, let's roll.
School ended a couple of days later, and her father got transferred to Florida in July. So
I worked all summer to pay off those debts, and I never saw Mary again.
That was, what, 13 years ago?
No, that's very interesting.
Anyway, I know it's not the type of thing you'd forget, but I guess I must have blocked it out of my head or something, because I was driving down the highway last week and I started thinking about Mary, and all of a sudden it was like I couldn't breathe. I mean, I felt like I was gonna die.
So I pulled off the road and I just sort of stopped in this,
I especially love that, that was very interesting. That's the opposite of listening well. It is someone that genuinely just doesn't care about the other person. Daniel Goleman, who we've been talking about, said this: listening is the single most important relational skill a person can develop. Maybe we should like all tattoo that on ourselves. Listening is the single most important relational skill a person can develop. Asking astute questions, being open-minded and understanding, not interrupting, seeking suggestions are all ways of communicating to others that they matter. Stop. Pass with care. A couple others real quick. Third one. Falling rocks. Falling rocks. One of the things that's easy to do is to focus on the negative in life. And man, there's a lot. But there is so much positive too. Even just listening to someone's story is positive. I said this kind of goes beyond, you know, accepting. It's truly about kind of being with people. But to have positive relationships means we have to be positive people. We can't always see the sky is falling, the sky is falling. Oh no, what's going to happen? What's around the bend? Sometimes we just need to choose to be positive, and other people will see that. Here, let me say this even better. Negative people have negative relationships. Of course, it makes sense. That's what they attract. Negativity, I see this a lot. I told you I teach high schoolers. I see it all the time. Someone says something negative about someone or, you know, some situation, and it's like they start sniffing. They get so excited. These, like, you know, 16, 17, 8-year-olds. They're like, oh, negativity. And they just, and they start talking. We don't need to be those kind of people. Always looking for falling rocks. We can stay away from that. Which leads to the last one. Construction zone. I put this one up because I kind of see all relationships as a little bit of a construction zone. I've been married, we are almost, like in 2 weeks, we've been married 19 years. And it's still a construction zone. There's still things going on that we have to figure out. Changes in life, changes in us. Empathy means that I accept the struggles and difficulties of other people. And instead of being negative about it, I just see it as a part of life. And as I raise my level of relational intelligence, I find that there are people that are having difficulties. They're having physical difficulties or emotional difficulties. And here's where empathy really comes into play, because empathy actually becomes compassion. I really start to care about them. Empathy should lead then to more acceptance and love. So let me say this last word, and then I'm going to pray. Who needs your empathy right now? As you think through all of this and you're trying to get your antennas up and all of that stuff, is there someone out there maybe you just don't understand or you struggle with? Or maybe they're just struggling and you don't know that you really want to deal? And maybe you start asking yourself some questions. Have I actually listened to this person? Listened, really listened. I heard them, but really listened. Have I put myself in their shoes? Have I seen things from their perspective? Maybe it's a neighbor you have some struggles with, or a coworker, a classmate, maybe someone here at the Journey. Maybe it's someone closer, like a parent or a child or your partner. Maybe you're in a close relationship physically, but there's been a lot of emotional distance. When we have empathy, we open ourselves up for truly positive relationships. Let's pray. God, I thank you for your empathy for us. You understand us. You know us. You experience us. And you are with us. In fact, as we get into the New Testament, God, the Holy Spirit comes and you live within us. And that connects each of us. There's such beauty and such a grand scope when we think of life and faith in this way. And we start to see how getting to positive relationships, we can actually do it. We can make this happen. I pray for anybody in here who needs empathy. They need somebody to come alongside them and show them that level of understanding. I pray, God, that you will send people into their lives. But I also just want to pray for all of us that we don't just wait for people to come into our lives in that way. We look for ways we can do that. Maybe with even just one other person or a few other people. Maybe we start that as something we pray for. God, bring people that we can show empathy to. Thank you for loving us in this way. Help us to continue to love each other. It's in your name, Christ, we pray. Amen. So we're going to head to the Eucharist table, as we do every week. And we said earlier that empathy starts to become compassion. I kind of want to show you what that looks like real quick. God's empathy is shown through Christ's compassion. And that word compassion, I just want you to see, if you don't know what that means, compassion means with, and then passion means to suffer. You've heard of the passion of the Christ and that kind of idea, the suffering of the Christ. So when I have compassion for someone, I don't just go, you know, pass with care, oh. In fact, I say, I'm going to suffer, literally, to suffer with another person. I'm going to suffer with them. So as we go to the table today, I want you to think about compassion and this idea of empathy. It's one of the three words we use to describe the journey. We say holy, you know, together, holy, and compassion. And the compassion was Jesus' entire life, even towards the end where he suffered on the cross and then rose again. And if we're going to build positive relationships, we follow the model of Christ. So as you go to the table today, here's what I'm going to ask you to do. Take a moment while you're there. And as you take the bread and you dip it into the wine and you bring it into your body, participating in the death and resurrection of Christ, as you leave the table, think about empathy and compassion in terms of how God has given it to you. And as you leave it, vow to give it away. This week, this month, this year, your life. Give that same kind of compassion in your relationships. The tables are open. We're going to have some music play. You can go when you're ready.